Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney, back off the road here in studio with my extremely attractive audio engineer. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And I usually like to start the show with an uplifting or cutesy story or something that's just not depressing. And I don't really have that in the news. So I'll tell a story about Las Vegas. I was in Las Vegas out on the road at a trade show, and I was standing in my booth dutifully doing my job when I was approached by an MD, PhD type. That's right, a medical doctor with a physical doctorate. Very smart fellow. And he was explaining to me how his new anti-aging system works, and he said to me, you know, the human body was really only designed to live 30 to 50 years. If you look back at history only a couple hundred years, you'll see that the lifespan was 30 to 50 years. And I said, wait a second. Wait just a second, doctor. The human body was designed to live, well, forever. And it's documented that people lived hundreds of years in the past. And then he looked at me a little bit cockeyed. He said, where's that? I said, well, the Bible. And then he kind of rolled his eyes a little bit. And I said, no, it's in the Bible. 700 years lifespan, and then it started to shrink after the fall. It started to go down. And then he says, well, do you believe in evolution at all? I said, of course not. And then he really rolled his eyes. I said, there's tremendous amount of evidence against evolution in the old Earth and the billions of years and all of that. I'm surprised you don't know that, being an educated man. He said, like what? I said, like what? I said, let me ask you this. Have you ever heard the term the missing link? Well, of course. Of course I have. I said, do you know why they call it the missing link? He said, why? Just setting me up, throwing me a softball. I said, because it's still missing. That's why. There's no indication. And I said, the fossil record itself indicates the sudden appearance of complex forms of life all over the Earth. Oh, you mean the Cambrian explosion? I said, well, that's what you say. So that's just a cover story for the fact that complex life suddenly appeared all over the Earth. I say it's evidence for a literal six-day creation and a global flood known as Noah's Flood. Anyway, he said, you know, we're probably not going to agree on anything. I said, yeah, we're probably not. I told him, certain friends of mine are right now working on a paper to solve the problem, the starlight and time problem. I said, you're not privy to a lot of this information. The circles you run in are probably different from the circles that I run in. But I said, you're familiar with the time light problem. And anyway, by then he left the booth. He didn't want to go any further. But my supervisor was in the booth. And he said, Doug, I don't think I've ever heard anything like that before. And I said, well, I said, he wasn't a lead. He wasn't coming in here to buy something. He was coming in here trying to sell me something. I said, if he was a lead, I probably wouldn't attack his evolutionary worldview. But since he was just another sales rep like me with an MD, PhD after his name, I decided I'd just give him a piece of my mind. Anyway, my supervisor said, We talked a little bit about the starlight and time problem. If you're not familiar, it's the fact that some stars are billions of light years away, yet we see the light. How then can we contend that the universe is less than 10,000 years old? It's a problem for creationists. Well, it's also a problem for evolutionists, but I don't have time to get into all that. And we talked a little bit about it, and I said there's probably a mechanism that was used to get the starlight here and to put starlight exactly where God wanted it in the creation. And friends of mine, men a lot smarter than me, are actually working on a paper to submit to a peer-reviewed scientific journal to solve the problem. He said, you know, send me that when you get it. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. I like this guy. So there's my uplifting. Had to start with something uplifting. I was very encouraged to hear the boss asking to look at the paper. So we'll just see. We'll just see if the problem has even been solved. And we'll see if other creationists want to take on the complex and sophisticated nature of the starlight and time problem. And when the paper's out, well, you'll all know about it. Actually, I think it's top secret. But I don't think I've let too much of the cat out of the bag. So just hold your horses, and we'll get to the starlight and time problem. A lot of things we're working on. Oh, by the way, to all you heathens who thought personhood was dead in Colorado, rumors of our demise have been greatly exaggerated. Just left the personhood office at Personhood Colorado today, and I was assured that unless some chicanery occurs at the Capitol, at the Secretary of State's office, which we certainly don't think any chicanery would occur, unless some chicanery occurs, we will have enough signatures, and the question of human personhood will again appear on the ballot in Colorado this year. It's also going to appear up in North Dakota. I want to thank everybody out there who helped in the effort, especially those of you who financed the personhood effort in Colorado. Made a big difference this year, and we're all very grateful that you were there. I'm going to have to send a personal message to the president of Personhood Colorado this year and thank him for his efforts on the behalf of, well, all of us who were involved in the campaign and the signature gathering, but also, and more importantly, on behalf of the innocent children like Brady Surovic, for whom the Brady Amendment is named this year. And, well, just thank you, everybody, and we'll see what happens when they tally up the signatures. But I'm making a bold prediction right here on the Weekly Worldview that personhood will appear on the Colorado ballot in the 2014 election. Now let's go to the news. It's a lot more depressing. We start in the Justice File. This is an update on a story we covered a few weeks ago. This is from HINTV out in Brunswick, Massachusetts, was it? I can't remember where this was. Anyway, you remember the teenager, Brunswick, Georgia. You remember the teenager who was convicted earlier this year of shooting a baby in the face. This fella's name was DeMarquis Elkins. You remember? Well, we reported on it right here. Elkins was convicted of aggravated assault and other charges for shooting a pastor in a separate mugging 10 days before he shot little Antonio Santiago, a 13-month-old baby. His mother wouldn't give the guy her money or whatever he was demanding, so he shot the 13-month in the face. So he's been convicted in the shooting death. He was convicted of malice murder. And in a deal with prosecutors, he was sentenced to life without parole, plus 105 years, just for good measure. They say because he was only 17 when he shot the 13-month-old, could not be sentenced to death under Georgia law. So DeMarquis Elkins murders a 13-month-old boy, shoots a pastor who managed to survive, and he's given life, where he'll be educated, medicated, taken care of at taxpayer expense for the rest of his life. And his soul will be hardened and calloused against God and against justice every day. So our first update on the news, not very uplifting. But let us move on and see if we can find something of some redeeming value here in the news. What do I have here? Oh, a Mitt Romney story. Well, let's just dive right in. This is from CNN.com. Mitt Romney, in an interview, has revealed what he thinks was his greatest error in the 2012 debacle that reelected Barack Obama. What do you think it was? Well, what do you think Mitt Romney thinks it was? He says the Hispanic community didn't understand his immigration stance well enough, and that probably cost him the election. Yeah, that's what Mitt Romney actually thinks. It wasn't that he was a liberal and conservatives just didn't go out and vote for him. It was a technical difficulty with the immigration and his messaging directed specifically at the Latino vote. That's what Mitt thinks, yeah. You know, he's insulting the Latino as if they're too stupid to understand. Anyway, so you're not helping yourself, Mitt. You should just retire. Get a real job, you puppet. Guy's an ignorant, empty suit. Been riding his daddy's coattails since he was in high school. And I think he's... Well, let's not beat up on Mitt Romney too much. He's yesterday's news. But that does remind me. I'm reading the Bible with my daughters, as I'm often wont to do. And we just so happen to be in the book of Deuteronomy. Reading it with my three little girls. And every night we play a little game. My youngest daughter, Alexis, who is four years old, she likes to guess which chapter we're going to read that night in order to show Daddy that she's paying attention and actually remembers what we talked about the night before when we read the previous chapter. So we have this little game, and I set up the Bible on the iPad, and little Alexis will cuddle up next to me, and she'll whisper in my ear the chapter she thinks it is for tonight, and she'll say it's Deuteronomy chapter 23. Then I'll open it and show her. Now, it's so cute when she says Deuteronomy, but here at the McBurney compound, we're homeschoolers, and we don't go for too much cutesy kitty talk. We correct our children's enunciation, and when they make mistakes, we correct them all the time. We don't let them get away with baby talk, white this and white that. We correct their... And so when it comes to the book of Deuteronomy, I said, Alexis, I want you to understand. The book we're reading tonight is called Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is the answer to a game show question on Jeopardy. Yes. The reason Barack Obama won a second term. Ding, ding. What is Deuteronomy? And the crowd went wild. All right. I've been working on that joke for a week. Anyway, I thought it was funny. All right. And my daughter now understands how to pronounce Deuteronomy correctly. All right. Now, let's move out of the politics file into the higher education file. The University of Maryland, the director of the school's Honor College, sent out an email last week to students, well, every student in the Honors College, whatever that is, there at the University of Maryland. The email states, quote, "This year we learned that it is legal to hunt down and kill American children in Florida," unquote. In an obvious reference to the Trayvon Martin shooting, the George Zimmerman trial. This is from Fox News. The email goes on to invite students to attend a lecture by Julian Bond, well-known communist agitator. The email, according to Fox News, comes on the heels of a host of allegations of bias on college campuses around the country. Shock! Bias on college campuses? That's right. They say there was a case at UNC Chapel Hill, in which funding was cut off for two conservative speakers to appear on campus. And there was an incident at the University of Kansas where a professor said he hoped the next shooting victims in the next mass shooting would be children of NRA members. And Fox points all this out. And nowhere in the story do they warn parents not to let your children attend a public university, for crying out loud. Higher education is destroying the hearts, minds, and souls of a generation. But Fox does not warn anyone about that. In fact, they quote a University of Maryland computer science professor who says, "It's over the top, but it's very much business as usual on this campus." As you should well know, bias on college campuses. Don't let your kids into the government schools, people, please. Whatever you do, please find another way. All right. So you've been forewarned, okay? Now let's go into the personhood file from Christianity Today. Christianity Today is a left-wing, liberal Christian magazine. And they want to pump up the abortion regulators, so they ran a story this past week. The headline screams, "Abortion clinics closing at record rate." The story goes on. Abortion centers are shutting down at an unprecedented rate. The total so far this year is 44, according to a pro-life organization that tracks abortion clinic operations. The reasons given, according to this organization, who we will not publicize, the reasons given for the upswing in closings of abortion clinics are supposedly the increasing state regulation and oversight of clinics. So the first thing they cite is the regulation of the murder of innocent people and how successful it is. Next, a growth in pro-life opinion and activity. Now that one I could probably buy because there is a lot more pro-life activity going on in the last few years. Number three, Christianity Today cites a decline in the abortion rate. In some cases, clinics have shut down when abortion doctors have retired or were no longer licensed. Now, there's another one I could buy. Doctors are afraid to go into the abortion industry because, well, number one, it's all about killing babies. Most doctors aren't into that. And a lot of them are scared that, you know, wild-eyed pro-lifers are going to show up at their house, make their life a living hell. So I would go along with that one. But one thing they don't mention here, while they do prop up the regulation of the killing of innocent people as a key reason that clinics are closing, I think the number one reason abortion clinics are closing are abortifacient pills, abortion pills. Why would you go to a clinic if you can just go buy a pill over the counter? Kill your baby. So it's not regulated, it's not effective murder regulation that's closing down abortion mills. It's cleaner, more scientific means of killing babies. It's the abortion pills. And folks, we're not winning. We are not winning this battle, and we will not win this battle by regulating the murder of innocent people. We will win this battle by looking to God and to reestablishing the legal recognition of the personhood of every person, born or unborn. All right, it's the Weekly Worldview. Nice job on the solo, but we just don't have time today, boys. Now we're going to move on into the culture file. It's good to be back behind the microphone. I've got to tell you, I've been developing a distinct lack of interest in the news. It's been very difficult for me to find stories that are interesting. I download 10 or 20 stories a day, and I only find one or two that I think are worthy of commentary. I know the big, what's the big news this week is the defunding of Obamacare. I actually think I'll get to something on that. Yeah, I was pretty excited about that. I almost quit the personhood campaign to sign up with the defund Obamacare campaign. Yeah, I was on the verge. They really had me interested there for a minute. All right, this is from Bloomberg News, from the Culture File. At a Manhattan dinner party, a former Citigroup executive gathered an eclectic mix of guests to sip Pinot Noir, dine on seared salmon, and talk about death. Yeah, they call them death dinners. This is a bit of a fad. Over the past month, according to Bloomberg, hundreds of Americans across the country have organized so-called death dinners designed to lift the taboo around talking about death in hopes of heading off conflicts over finances and medical care and avoiding unnecessary suffering at the end of one's life. It's a topic that is resonating as baby boomers deal with the passing of their parents and even come face to face with their own mortality. And yeah, I go on and I read this story from Bloomberg. And first of all, I think this sounds almost like a commercial for Obamacare. They want the baby boomers to start thinking about how their parents are going to die and how they are going to die. Come on. Come on in. The water's warm. Let's all talk about how we can all die or even kill each other. Or just allow our parents to be, you know, the death panels and all. Anyway, I thought it was an Obama commercial. But the only reason I thought the story was worthy of any commentary at all was that throughout the entire story, and they go through the insipid conversations of these vacuous people, line by line, there's no talk of heaven or hell or sin or God or the afterlife. None of that. Just a utilitarian discussion of how best to just get it over with. It's just kind of depressing. I tell you, you baby boomers, you're kind of an embarrassing generation as a whole. Now, I know some baby boomers who I have great respect for. But I'm just saying, as a whole, you're going to go down in history as just fairly embarrassing. And hopefully my generation can help society to recover from what you've done to us. Starting with the Grateful Dead right on down. All of it. Very annoyed by the whole thing. All right, now, on another one from the Culture File. This is from Breitbart News. I have debated whether or not to talk about this story. Because I guess you'll understand as I read the story from Breitbart. A journalist named Stephen Jimenez, over the course of several years interviewed over 100 people in regards to the killing of one Matthew Shepard. You remember Matthew Shepard? We used to cover him here on the Worldview back, I think, starting in 1999 when we first went on the internet. I called him St. Matthew of Assisi, if you remember. You remember the narrative around Matthew Shepard. Well, this journalist, Stephen Jimenez, he writes for The Advocate, which is a homosexual publication. So I assume Jimenez is a homosexual himself. I don't know that they hire anybody who's not over at The Advocate. Or I guess if you were, you'd be really uncomfortable working there. So I've struggled with whether or not to even talk about this homo's book. But apparently he's an effective journalist, investigative journalist. Breitbart says he amassed enough anecdotal evidence to build a persuasive case that... did I almost lisp on that? Just talking about Matthew, I start slipping into a lisp. He amassed enough anecdotal evidence to build a persuasive case that Shepard's sexuality was, if not incidental, certainly less central than the popular consensus has led us to believe. But what really happened to Matthew Shepard? Well, Jimenez says he was beaten, tortured, and killed by one or both of the men who are now serving life sentences. But it turns out that Shepard was a drug dealer and a meth addict himself. And he was friends and partners with one of the men who killed him. Indeed, his killer may have killed him because Shepard allegedly had come into possession of a large quantity of drugs and refused to give it to his lover. And so his lover beat him, tortured him, and when he wouldn't tell him where the dope was, he killed him and left him strapped to that fence. The book also shows that Shepard's killer was on a 5-day drug binge at the time of the killing. Well, the Matthew Shepard Foundation is quite upset. And they released a statement. But before I read that, this is what bothered me about the homo who wrote the book. I'm interested in the facts of the book because I was involved in the case. We went up to the trial of the two killers, the two men who killed Matthew Shepard. We went up to their trial. We demanded the death penalty for the killers. Well, we didn't get that. I think they're serving life, right? But anyway, so I was involved, so I'm interested in the facts of the story. Don't get me wrong. But this is what I found most revealing about the author, Stephen Jimenez. The author of the Advocate piece... Oh, so this isn't Jimenez. This is another homo at the Advocate writing about the book. Here's what he says. There are valuable reasons for telling certain stories in a certain way at pivotal times. But that doesn't mean we have to hold on to them once they've outlived their usefulness. Gross. A lot of extra S's there. So do you get that? The homo is basically saying there are reasons for lying at certain times to make things happen. But once the lie has served its purpose, we don't have to hold on to these lies, especially once the facts come out. And this book, I believe, will not slow down the homosexuals in their steamrolling agenda to destroy civilization. It will not slow them down in the least. Because the lie had its desired effect. The damage is done. The damage has been done. Now, do I even want to say what the Matthew Shepard Foundation said? Nah, I really don't. Don't really care what the lisping perverts over at the Matthew Shepard found. Of course, they say none of it's true. But, well, I'm not going to buy the book, and I don't recommend you buy the book. I don't want this homo making money off this book. Anyway, I guess that's all I've got to say about that. I wish I had something deep. I think I did say something deep about how these homos are not afraid to lie when it suits their purposes. I mean, they're as bad as communists and the rest of them. Muslims, you know, the Quran says you can lie. You can do evil that good would come of it. That's basically what the homo author said. You can do evil that good may come of it. The ends justify the means, so to speak. Well, the Christian ethos rejects such thinking. One must never do evil that good will come of it. Okay, and it's pretty much only the Christian ethos that rejects such a thing, and that's why the hope for all of humanity lies with the body of Christ and no one else. All right, now let's move on. Well, since we just talked about homos, I apologize, by the way, tell my extremely attractive audio engineer. She gets quite annoyed when I delve into such topics. She thinks these things should never even be discussed in public, and frankly, I agree with her. And if there wasn't a steamroller rolling over civilization with a bunch of queers strapped to it, I wouldn't be talking about it. But they won't shut up. Case in point, from HawaiiNewsNow.com, Hawaiian Governor Abercrombie has called the legislature into a special session to address the issue of homosexual marriage. Abercrombie says his decision is the natural progression in a discussion that began in this state 20 years ago. Yeah. So things that should not be spoken of in public, they've been talking about them at the legislature in Hawaii for 20 years. In public, in front of God and everyone, with no shame whatsoever. Abercrombie says it's time for marriage equality to take place. Marriage equality, that's the Orwellian term, the new speak term that they've applied to homosexual marriage. The left is very good at that, taking terms that are the exact opposite of everything that they're actually trying to achieve and tricking the public. It's like Planned Parenthood, family planning. Who could be against family planning? And if we're going to be parents, shouldn't we plan? Well, actually, what they're about is murdering innocent babies. But generations of school children have grown up thinking, yeah, Planned Parenthood. I think if I was going to be a parent, I would plan. I sure am glad there's an organization to help me plan. Unbelievable. So go back to Hawaii. Let's see, the special session has been called by Abercrombie, the Hawaiian governor, but in typical lazy islander fashion, the session won't begin until the end of October. Why? Well, it's just the way it is. If you've ever been to a semi-tropical island, things just don't move as quickly there as they do in other places. And so there you go. At least the homosexual agenda is slowed in Hawaii just by the laziness of the people and the legislature out there. My extremely attractive audio engineer is chuckling as she is from a semi-tropical island, and she knows very well that what I say is true. The reason it's a stereotype is because it's generally true. All right. Let's see here. Oh, Abercrombie wants the lawmakers there in Hawaii to take up a bill that, as currently written, gives clergy the right to refuse to participate in homosexual marriages. Note, put an emphasis on as it is currently written. Because here's the thing about the homosexuals, just like with the communists and the other heathens, all they want to do is get their foot in the door. They'll write just about anything to legalize homosexual marriage and to codify it in law. And then they can start on their real agenda, which is to have Christians arrested, tried, and eventually executed. That's the goal of the homosexual agenda, and don't believe that it's anything other than that. It's to kill all the Christians. All right. Now, I know that's a little over the top, you think? Hyperbole? I don't know. I don't think so, folks. I think it's still early in the game, and we'd better be on our game. We go to the Telegraph in London. Stephen Crone, 66-year-old man, was once called the man who couldn't catch AIDS. I wasn't aware of this fellow, but apparently he started caring for his partner, Jerry, back in 1978 as Jerry's health deteriorated, and he became one of the first people to die from the disease that was to become known as AIDS. Well, this fella, Stephen Crone, was caring for his partner, living with his partner, but he never contracted AIDS, never contracted the HIV virus. The Telegraph says he never became ill, despite continuing to engage in, well, we're not going to get into what he engaged in, that's pretty disgusting, but so doctors studied him and eventually established that his white blood cells had a rare defect, which means they would not allow the HIV virus in. The man who can't catch AIDS, he was called. Well, last week, he committed suicide in New York at the age of 66. So, well, what do you say about that? Another one bites the dust. What, six of one, half a dozen of the other? I mean, if the AIDS doesn't get you, the lifestyle is going to get you. And the bottom line is, the man who can't catch AIDS is never got AIDS, but he's just as dead. I could just let that whole thing. Thank you, Stevie. Brother Stevie Ray Vaughan on the gets up. Oh, yeah. All right. So during the break, my extremely attractive audio engineer asked me, why did you pick that story about the guy who couldn't catch AIDS? So I told her, I said, well, I thought it was ironic. He couldn't catch AIDS and he killed himself. She said, okay. Didn't find it that interesting, but I suppose there is a certain degree of irony in there. Fine. It's your show. I just do the music. All right. Now we move on from the, well, where were we? We were in the degenerate file. Now we go on to the politics file, which is a subcategory of the degenerate file. This story from the Washington Post: Obama's second term has been buffeted from the start by unpredictable calamities. A mass shooting at an elementary school in Newtown, Connecticut. Escalating violence in Egypt and Syria and throughout the Middle East. And now the Navy Yard shootings. Of course, this was before the avalanche of terror attacks that have happened just in this past week. From the mall in Nairobi, Kenya. To this morning in Africa, I can't remember the, I believe it was Nigeria, where Muslim terrorists went into a school and shot sleeping students, 50 or more dead just today. Bombing, so many terrorist bombings that the news can't even report them all. And the Washington Post is, well, I guess they're trying to throw up some smoke for Barry and say, boy, these have been some unpredictable calamities that have buffeted the Obama administration. They report that in his recent remarks on the economy, Barry said, quote, "This country has worked hard, has worked too hard for too long, to dig out of a crisis, just to see their elected representatives here in Washington purposely cause another crisis. Let's stop the threats," said Barry. "Let's stop the threats. Just get out, Barry, please. Perhaps another more worthy can come in and stop the threats that you have set loose upon the whole world. Through either your gross incompetence or your calculated effort to turn America into a second-rate world power. It's one of the two, Barry, and you need to get out." I think he was with the threats, he was talking about the threat to shut down the government. Republicans are threatening to shut down the government. They want to defund Obamacare. Cut it out. Cut it out. Just cut it out. I heard him say that. Just cut it out. You know, like a father with kids in the back seat of the car. Just cut it out. Anyway, that's the politics file. Was there any reason I did that story? Oh, I just wanted to list a few of the calamities that Barry is putting the nation and the world through, and just to remind you that Barry's either, as I said, he's either grossly incompetent or he is part of a calculated effort to turn America into a third world cesspool. Now, on to the war file. We go to Pakistan, a report from the Telegraph in London. The carnage inflicted in recent days at All Saints Church in Peshawar, Pakistan, was dealt by two young men dressed in security uniforms who, under instruction from the Pakistani Taliban, detonated suicide vests and turned a warm community celebration at the All Saints Church into the biggest massacre of Christians in Pakistan's history. The article, the headline says, "Christians in Pakistan now fear for their lives." They interviewed a number of people there on scene in Peshawar, Pakistan. One man interviewed said, "Christians face a bleak future. We are not safe in Pakistan," said one Christian father. "This was the first time we suffered, but it was huge," he said from his son's bedside at the hospital. This Christian father said, "I just can't explain how I feel. I've lost many friends. I've lost cousins, uncles, aunts. We're confused, and we just don't know what to do." And what's really sad is we here in America, we can't help the guy. And if anyone should, it should be Christians in America. It should be the Christian leader of America should be coming up alongside the Christians in Pakistan and dealing a death blow to anyone who would bomb a church. But well, we're just not in a position to help. A bishop there told the Daily Telegraph a shocking story of one little girl's ordeal. There was one little girl in the trauma unit at the hospital, and one of the bishop's people was trying to make the sign of the cross on her forehead. And she said, "Don't do it, don't do it. They'll come and they'll kill me." Said this little girl, she's 9 or 10 years old. She didn't want a cross on her body. She didn't want to be identified as a Christian because she said, "They'll come and kill me." All of the children in the hospital wards, if they retain their faith, will at some point, according to the article, will lose out on jobs because of their religion. They may be accused under Pakistan's discriminatory blasphemy laws, under which Christians can be jailed, or like Isia Bibi, a farm worker, they could be sentenced to death, like she has been after co-workers said she insulted the Prophet Muhammad. We reported on that story right here. The level of Christian persecution is shocking, and it must be coming up as a witness before God daily in his throne room. It has to be, because the level of persecution against our Christian brothers and sisters in God's country, right there in the Middle East, is at a level that is simply alarming and shocking, and surely it is coming up daily as a witness before God. Christians, according to the Telegraph. Christians do Pakistan's lowest status and lowest paid jobs. The father of the little girl we talked about, he was a janitor at an Air Force base. And many Christians work as cleaners, sweepers, and domestic servants, jobs done by the so-called untouchables. Oh, I know, you thought the untouchables were only in India. But remember, Pakistan really is just a part of India that the Muslims conquered and basically scared the Hindus into giving them. And the caste system with the untouchables, it's in Pakistan too. And the untouchables in Pakistan are primarily Christians. Now, we've got to pray for our brothers and sisters over there. I want to pray for them. I want to call spiritual forces in, but I wish we could also send some F-16s. I really do. In light of all this, in light of all this Christian persecution and the avalanche of Muslim terror that has been unleashed in the past few weeks alone, the Weekly Standard reports that at the United Nations this past week, John Kerry, Secretary of State, believe it or not, actually shook hands with Iranian Foreign Minister Zarif. I'll get his first name. Maybe he's one of these guys with one name, like Cher. Foreign Minister Zarif of Iran. Kerry shook his hands on camera in front of everybody. And you remember at the United Nations, there was talk of Barack Obama meeting with the Iranian leader, Hassan Rouhani. He was actually talking about meeting with this guy. The Weekly Standard reports that ultimately the two leaders did not meet as the gesture was deemed too complicated for Iran at this time. So the Iranians turned Barry down. They wouldn't talk with him. All right, but Barry would not be restrained. No. The Weekly Standard also reported, I believe this was the next day, that Barack Obama had a phone conversation with Iranian president, maniac killer, Islamist fanatic Hassan Rouhani. They quote Barry in his speech, "Just now I spoke on the phone with President Rouhani of the Islamic Republic of Iran." He seemed quite proud of himself. "President Rouhani and I have directed our teams to continue working expeditiously to pursue an agreement, and throughout this process, we will stay in close touch with our friends and allies in the region, including Israel." All right, fine. Including Israel, says Barry. Obama said that Iran's supreme leader has issued a fatwa against the development of nuclear weapons, and President Rouhani has indicated that Iran will never develop nuclear weapons. He said they'd never. There's a fatwa on everything, guys. Can I meet with him, please? This is, in my mind, this is kind of how this occurred. "Can I meet with President Rouhani? He's going to be at the UN. I'll be there. Can we set up a meeting?" "Mr. President, he says he doesn't want to meet with you. He says it's too complicated at this time." "Oh, really? Huh. Well, that's very, very disappointing. I really wanted to meet with him. I thought perhaps I'd have the opportunity to bow to Mr. Rouhani if we could just meet. I'm sure we could be friends. Has he left town yet?" "Oh, no, Mr. President. He's actually still at the UN. I think he's in the conference room." "Well, can we give him a call then?" "Mr. President, I don't think Mr. Rouhani wants to take your call. He's been pretty clear that the issue is very..." "Well, ring him up. Do you have the number? Do you have the number for the... Just give me the phone. Give me the phone. 212. I've got the number. I know the number." Beep, boop, beep, beep, bop, boop, boop. "I'm sure he'll take my call. He knows I want to be friends." Meanwhile, on the other side, ring. "Najib, answer the phone." Ring. Ring. "Muhammad, answer the phone." Ring. Ring. "What are all you idiots doing? I'm the president of Iran. I have to answer my own phone. If you want anything done around here, you have to do it yourself. I will answer the phone." "Hello. This is Hassan." "Hello, President Rouhani. This is President Barack Obama. Just hoping to catch you before you left town. Do you think we could possibly talk about... Hassan grabs the phone. You idiots! I told you to answer the phone! No, now I have to talk to him. Now he knows I am here. Idiots. Listen, Barry, I have... unfortunately, I was just heading out the door to have my turban cleaned before I get on the plane. And so, please, I really do appreciate your call. Don't get me wrong. Yes, yes, Mr. Rouhani, please, please. I want to talk about your nuclear. I have some ideas in which we could pursue some efforts to have a comprehensive solution to your pursuance of obviously peaceful nuclear. Listen, Barry, 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 I really do appreciate it. I really do appreciate your call, but just somebody please to act like you're calling me from the other room so we can get out of here. Barry, I've got to go, unfortunately. That is my driver. Thank you very much, though. Yes, I will definitely call you back as soon as I get a chance. Yes, yes. Assalamu alaikum. Click. So there you go. That's just how I think it, you know, in my own mind might have gone down there. All right, so bottom line is, the leader of the free world, the last hope for humanity on the planet, has met with the Islamo-Nazi terrorist leader of Iran, who is hell-bent on dropping a nuclear bomb on Tel Aviv. And he and Barry had to call him to add insult to injury and to tell you just how bad things have gotten, ladies and gentlemen. That's how bad it's gotten. Oh, by the way, just in case you hadn't heard, according to Breitbart, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani took part in an event just a week prior to him going to the UN and taking Barry's call. He participated in an event where there were calls for the destruction of Israel. That's right, just a few days before he went to the UN-General Assembly. Trucks carrying long-range missiles passed in front of Mr. Rouhani alongside signs calling for the destruction of Israel. And Barry just wants to be friends and just wants to reach out to the mullahs in Iran.
You look like an angel. Walk like an angel. Talk like an angel, but I got mine. You're the devil in disguise. Oh, yes, you are the devil in disguise.
It's the Weekly Worldview. Thank you, Mr. Presley. We appreciate your thoughts on the matter. I couldn't agree more. Now, I'm going to go to the war file. And I hate to do this because I had no idea that this Kenyan Mall massacre, this terrorist attack, obviously shocking. But when you read the story about what actually happened in there, well, I'm gonna give you some details from the Daily Mail over in London where they actually still report the news. I was watching this all 3 days that it was occurring, and the one thing that sticks in my mind is that homo on CNN saying, it appears that terrorists are randomly killing people throughout the mall. Just random killings. Random. It's all just random. That's what's stuck in my mind. That's how it's reported here in America. But the reporters over at the Daily Mail said Kenyan soldiers told of horrific torture meted out by terrorists in the Nairobi Mall massacre, with claims that hostages were dismembered, had their eyes gouged out, were left hanging from hooks, men were castrated, and had fingers removed with pliers before being blinded and their bodies hung on hooks. Children were found dead in the food court refrigerators with knives still embedded in their bodies. And the terrorist asked the victims who the mother of the Prophet Muhammad was, asked them if they were Muslims or Christians, and then they killed the Christians. It's just unbelievable. They used pliers to tear off people's noses and fingers. So this wasn't just about Islamist terrorists making a political statement and to try to strike terror into the hearts of people with a bombing. This was about bloodthirsty madness being visited upon Christians by these Islamic fanatics. It wasn't just about the political statement. They took personal pleasure in the physical torture and killing and dismemberment of Christians. It's actually more shocking than you thought. It's more vicious than I would have even imagined, having watched it from afar on television, to hear this. The Daily Mail reports in the final paragraph, shell-shocked Kenyan troops said the inside of the Israeli-run mall resembled a scene from a horror movie, with blood splattered everywhere and dead bodies strewn across the floor. An Israeli-run mall. Did you catch that? That doesn't sound random, Anderson Cooper. And if you were really looking around 360 degrees there, Mr. Cooper, I think you would have reported that this wasn't random. They attacked an Israeli-run mall, and they killed everyone who was not a Muslim. And not only did they bomb them or shoot them, but they tortured them personally, face-to-face, up close. The Islamic religion produces bloodthirsty maniacs. And I think that this religion cannot be tolerated. At some point, this religion has to be blotted out. And I'm not talking about killing Muslims. I don't want them to be killed. I want the ones who are just pew sitters and the ones who are just trying to be devoutly religious, and this happens to be how they were born, I want them to be given the option of Jesus Christ. That's what I want to happen. Jesus Christ can blot out the Muslim religion and terrorism without a shot being fired. But Jesus Christ has been banished from these lands. And the West, sheepishly and spinelessly, has accepted this state of affairs. Cowards. Post-Christian cowards. And that is why the Islamists, if things don't change dramatically, the Islamists will win. And your granddaughter and mine will be wearing a burqa. They'll be living under Sharia law if something doesn't change dramatically and soon. A horrific story. Horrific. How much time? We're almost out of time. The politics file. A recent poll, according to Breitbart, a recent poll was just released. People were asked which world leader was most effective during the Syrian chemical weapons crisis. These are Americans who were asked this. Well, almost half said that Vladimir Putin was most effective, and only about 25% thought Obama was effective. Yeah, that's in America. Yeah, in Russia, I'm sure it was even better for Putin. Hey, you know, I think Putin's probably more reachable than Obama. You know, at least Putin acknowledges that he needs the religious organizations in order to maintain his power. He's at least willing to give them a nod. He's at least willing to stand up against some of the homos. And if we could just reach Putin on personhood and convince him to stop the abortion holocaust in Russia, which is shocking. The abortion holocaust in Russia is shocking. You know, Putin's just last week, he had a day where he told everyone, take the day off work, go home and try to procreate and have kids. So anyway, I would prefer to sit down with Vladimir Putin and talk about the future of Western civilization than Barack Obama. I'm sorry. Mr. Obama, you lost me somewhere along the way. I think Putin probably more reachable. He's probably more useful. All right. Pakistan. All right, now I talked earlier about a little bit of creationism there at the very beginning of the show. And since we're almost out of time, I want to revisit that. Because I do believe teaching the children that God created the heavens and the earth, and that he is their creator and judge and wants to be their savior, I think that is the foundation of solving all the world's problems. It's just teaching kids those fundamentals. Well, I want to report on this earthquake in Pakistan. This is from UAE News, United Arab Emirates News. They reported last week that the death toll from a powerful earthquake in southwestern Pakistan has risen to 327 people at last report. The 7.7 magnitude earthquake struck the Auran district of the Baluchistan province there in Pakistan. It destroyed scores of mud-built houses and formed a new island which rose from the sea just off the southern coast of Pakistan. The 7.7 magnitude quake lasted for 400,000 years. No, wait a minute. No, it lasted just a few minutes. I'm sorry. I was reverting back to my government school education that taught me that islands took hundreds of thousands and millions of years to evolve and rise up. Plate tectonics pushes them slowly up out of the seafloor. Actually, it occurred in just a few minutes. The earthquake did not last even 100,000 years or a million years. It didn't even last 100,000 minutes. It lasted just a minute or two and pushed an island up. That's pretty amazing. What's up with the earth? Well, that's another thing I quoted to the PhD MD. I said, what about earthquakes? I said, if the earth and the universe is so old, how come the earth is so unstable still? You'd think things would calm down after several million years. There was a 7.6 magnitude earthquake in 2005 in central Kashmir that killed 73,000 people. There was a 7.8 magnitude quake in southeast Iran that just recently killed 41 people. And there's more and more earthquakes. The earth is very unstable. How do you explain that, Mr. PhD? I think he had already left the booth at that point, and I was just pontificating for my own, just for my own mental health. All right. So we'll go back to the politics file as we are running out of time here. Ted Cruz was seen praying in front of the White House last Thursday. He was participating in a prayer rally for Saeed Abedini, who's been in an Iranian prison for 1 year. He's being persecuted for his faith in Jesus Christ, according to this article by CBN, which is, I think it's Christian, but not really necessarily. Actually, I think it's the Christian Broadcasting Network. But anyway, Cruz on his knees in the picture, and obviously observing the McBurney dictum that the first rule of Republican primary politics is to bamboozle the Christians. Yeah, Ted Cruz, now the author here, the CBN article, Christian, but not really. He says, I've interviewed Ted Cruz many times. I've spent time with him and his family. He's a true Bible-believing Christian. He's not ashamed of the gospel. Ted Cruz voted to confirm openly, deviantly pervert federal judge Todd Hughes just a few days before he got the photo op here on his knees praying for Saeed Abedini. Anyway, I'm so jaded and pessimistic about anyone who holds political office that I may never look to another elected politician to do anything for anyone ever except ruin and destroy things. And it's frankly kind of depressing. But that's where I'm at, folks. I'm sorry. By the way, Denver Bible Church hosted a prayer rally for Saeed Abedini there at the west steps of the Capitol. It was wildly successful. The body was exhorted. That's right. Christians, we don't have moments of silence, and we don't have candlelight vigils. No, we get together, we call upon the name of the Lord, and we did that here in Denver in front of a large group of Christian brothers and sisters. It was awesome. I want to thank my friends at Denver Bible Church for sponsoring that. I was glad to participate. Now, finally, from the sports file, we don't do many stories from the sports file. The winless Jacksonville Jaguars have released their new strategy to increase attendance at this week's game. Free beer. They're going to give away free beer to try to get people to buy tickets to watch their pathetic football team there in Jacksonville. And now this has prompted a number of Christian friends and me to ask, why don't the Jacksonville Jaguars hire Tim Tebow? Win, lose, or draw, they would sell out every game for the rest of the season. Even if they lose every game, they'll sell out every game. And why would they try giving away free beer rather than hire Tim Tebow? Well, I might have the answer. Maybe, I don't know. The owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, is one Shahid Khan. He is a Pakistani Muslim, and he's owned the team since January of 2012. And while he is willing to violate the dictates of his religion by giving away free beer, he's apparently not willing to hire a Christian who could save his whole team from disaster. I don't know. Maybe I'm too conspiratorial, but I just can't imagine why these guys don't do something to stop the bleeding. And perhaps this is it. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. We're out of time. The music is going to end. I want to thank my friends at Denver Bible Church, KGOV.com, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, and as always, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. And the music has ended, and that means we've got to go. And should the Lord tarry, please come back, because I will be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.